Hello, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Magicians carry wings so they can fly. Let's blow a horn and love. Let's get on it and ride and laugh and dance and jive. Let's shake the dead and let the downers die. The magic of the singers warms the earth. A song, a poem, some paradise of the mind. I got to smile now. I'm feeling good. The city streets, the palace of my mind. Well, yes, this is Utah Phillips back with you again here with Steve Baker in the studio, and that was the Borsdorfs playing all the banjo and that fine fiddle music with the railroad sounds mixed in. The poem that I started off with is from a new friend, an old friend, a fellow I was just getting to know, and then he passed away, a great poet from San Francisco by the name of Jack Micheline. Well, we're here in the studios of KVMR, here, old music for the new Bolognium, in Nevada City, California, my home up here in the foothills of the Sierra. It's been a blustery, in many ways, raw spring here. The wind has been blowing outside. Last week, the wind blew so hard. It blew so hard.
Tell me, Utah, how hard did it blow?
Thank you, Steve. Blew so hard I saw some Siamese twins trying to find each other. How does a folk song start? Now, we did several times since I've been doing this program, we've done Folk Music 101. A quick review. A folk song is not owned. It has nobody's name on it. It's like the national park, like the national forest. It belongs to all of us now. I'll harp away at that until everybody finally gets the point that nobody can say I own this song or I have copywrote this song. It also exists in different versions. It shows in the various versions that it's been passed around, that it's been used, and it's been altered to suit different human conditions, different emotions, different thoughts. All right? And I guess the last part of Folk Music 101 was that there is no Republican folk music, thus defining it negatively. How does the folk song start? Well, first of all, people have got to sing it. How does a song that has a composer start out on that trail, on that route, the road that's going to take it into the heart of the people, but into anonymity? Well, there was a fellow over in London a number of years ago, I guess he's still there, by the name of Ralph McTell. Ralph McTell wrote a song that became very well known in Britain. Then Ralph toured the United States playing the folk music clubs. Of course, that was a time when folk singers would finish their work and go to wherever else in town other folk singers were singing, and then late at night after the places had closed, share some drinks and share some stories and share some songs. Ralph McTell played Chicago. He played a place called Somebody Else's Troubles. Well, the house singer there was Fred Holstein. Now, Fred Holstein could work at a club with an after-hours license, for he got a bunch of drunk salesmen in town for a convention, and he'd get them, by God, singing together like a choir. Fred Holstein did not write songs. Fred Holstein found songs, and he sang them as well as they can be sung. He heard Ralph McTell sing the song, The Streets of London, and then he started singing it. Well, people from around Chicago or people passing through town on the road going to other gigs in Midwest and on West learned that song from Fred Holstein, and so they scattered it. They took it all over the country. That song is still very much with us. Let's listen to Fred Holstein sing Ralph McTell's Streets of London.
Have you seen the old man in the closed-down market kicking up the papers in his worn-out shoes? In his eyes there is no pride, hung loosely at his side. Yesterday's paper telling yesterday's news. So yes, I know we get lonely. Sometimes for us the sun don't shine. Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I will show you something to make you change your mind. Have you seen the old girl who walks the streets of London? Dirt in her hair, her clothes are all in rags. She's no time for talking, she keeps right on a walking, carrying her home into carrier bags. So yes, I know we get lonely. Sometimes for us the sun don't shine. But let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I will show you something to make you change your mind. In the all-night cafe, 11:15, same old man sitting all alone, looking at the world over the rim of a teacup. Each tea lasts an hour, and he wanders home alone. So yes, I know we get lonely. Sometimes for us the sun don't shine. But let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I will show you something to make you change your mind. Have you seen the old man outside the seaman mission? Memory fading with metal ribbons that he wears. In our winter city, the rain cries a little pity for one more forgotten hero and a world that doesn't care. So yes, I know we get lonely. Sometimes for us the sun don't shine. Let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I will show you something to make you change your mind.
Fred Holstein, an old friend who worked with Malad in Chicago. I hope he's still singing. Well, as Ralph McKell, The Streets of London. How does a folk song begin to lose its name? How does it lose its name? Well, a lot of you know the song, "Oh, you can't scare me, I'm sticking to the Union, I'm sticking to the Union." You know, the Union Maid that the Almanac Singers used to sing, oh, during the 1940s. Well, it's still sung today on picket lines everywhere. That tune is that's a version of a much, much older song. And I know that that song probably has an author. And I think if you looked, did an internet search or called up the Library of Congress or the publishing houses, you could find out who wrote that song. But now when Charlie Blacklock learned it, Charlie Blacklock's an older fellow, plays the musical saw, and has a little band called Charlie's Band down in Alameda. It didn't matter to Charlie if he knew who wrote that song or not. he just liked the song and learned how to play it. Played it for years and years, and finally taught it to some younger people who formed his band, Charlie's Band. And so let's listen to the earlier version of that song. Some of you must know it, an old dance tune called Red Wing. Here's Charlie's Band, Charlie Blacklock's band, and Red Wing with Art Peterson.
She loved the warrior bold, the Shiloh maid of old, till brave and gay he rode one day to battle far away. Now the moon shines tonight on pretty Red Wing, the breeze is sighing, the night bird's crying, while far beneath the stars her brave is sleeping, while Red Wing's weeping her heart away. She kept the campfire bright, while under the sky each night she would lie and dream about his coming by. But when the braves returned, the heart of Red Wing yearned, for brave one day her warrior gay fell bravely in the fray. Now the moon shines tonight on pretty Red Wing, the breeze is sighing, the night bird's crying.
Oh, Art Peterson, I think in Red Wing, the forerunner, the beginning of the great song Union Maid. It's a dance tune. How many of you out there have a true sense in your own life of a music that you own, a music that belongs to you, like your eyes, like your ears, like your toenails? An authentic sense of collective ownership, really of anything. Most everything in our culture today militates against that kind of sentiment. But, you know, there was a time, and it still persists in some places, where people expressed, felt, without even being able to verbalize it, an authentic sense of ownership of the music which they sang and played and shared to suit their needs from day to day, from year to year. So there's no sense among those people that you borrowed a tune or you stole a tune. If the music belongs to you, you can adapt it and make it do whatever it is that you want to do. A good example, we talked about the Almanac Singers a minute ago. There's an old song called Old Joe Clark, and I think anybody knows anything about old-time music knows about it or has at least heard it. It's one of those anonymous thousands and thousands of songs. Now, when Woody Guthrie hit New York City, after coming out of California and before that Oklahoma, and joined up with the Almanacs. The Almanacs were singing songs like Round and Round Hitler's Grave, Round and Round We Go. Or later on, they were singing Round and Round the Picket Line, Round and Round We Go. Workers get the runner, round the bosses get the dough. Well, that's the old tune to Old Joe Clark that Woody authentically owned because he'd grown up with that song. It was like the land. It was like the air. And so he adapted it to suit current needs. In any case, let's listen to a fine old recording of Woody Guthrie himself singing and playing Old Joe Clark.
It's round, round, old Joe Clark, goodbye, Betty Brown. Round, round, old Joe Clark, I'm gonna leave this town. I'm gonna leave today. I went down to old Joe's house. He lived down in town. Every tooth in old Joe's head, smiling a quarter round. It's round, round, old Joe Clark, goodbye, Betty Brown. Round, round, old Joe Clark, I'm gonna leave this town. Wished I had a nickel, and I wished I had a dime, and I wished I had a pretty gal, I'd kiss her all the time. Round, round, old Joe Clark, round, round, I say. Round, round, old Joe Clark, I'm gonna leave today.
Well, how did this Beaumont rag go?
Well, there was jumping right in on top of Woody was Alan Lomax, who the great folklore collector, who originally recorded all those songs of Woody that Woody sang for the Library of Congress. Collecting, yeah, Lomax was one of the greatest, but he wasn't a singer. Oh, he did some, but he wasn't a traveling singer. There are traveling singers who do collect, who make it their business to seek out odd songs, unusual songs, lost songs, songs that bubble up and percolate up out of people's lives as you're wandering about the country, and they put those songs back to work where they find them, and then as they continue to travel. One of the great ones of those is Art Theme. Art Theme doesn't travel much anymore. He has the MS, and he's in a wheelchair. He's full of light, and he's full of joy. But boy, when he was out there, he sure did the work, and he found many and many a good song. He became a walking archive of American folk music. He liked to sing the old ballads, the old child ballads, which sometimes you still find being sung by elderly people in the southern mountains where the English settlers came in the early days. Well, let's listen to a version of that. In fact, let's just let Art tell you about how he collected this song.
My wife Carol put popcorn in the pancake batter this morning so they'd flip themselves, you know. Worked out. I'd never seen that before. Got a couple on the ceiling. Well, let's see. One kind of song that hasn't been sung this weekend. At least I don't. Well, sort of. Maybe. Here's a cowboy song from the West. Now, at the same time, it's a child ballad. Samuel Pepys, January 2nd, 1666, mentioned in his diary having heard the song Barbara Allen sung on the streets of London, and not on the streets, but in London. And 3 centuries later, I met a cowboy in a bar in Cheyenne named Del Bray. I was very young. I knew I loved folk songs, but I really didn't know what I was looking for. Had instincts in the right direction. And I said, do you know any of the real old ballads that you might have heard when you were growing up? He said, well, here's one. And he sang me a version of Barbara Allen that had become a cowboy song. And I thought it was kind of strange, but I just wrote it down on the back of the proverbial envelope, stuck it away in my duffel bag. We wound up in Mexico City that trip. And several years later, I dug it out of my file. I keep everything song-related anyhow. Let you make your own value judgments on this. Lots of people do. Near Medicine Bow, where I was born, there was a fair maid dwelling. Made all the boys ride saddle sore, and her name was Barbara Allen. And her name was Barbara Allen. It was in the merry month of May. Green buds, they were swelling. young Billy, come to the western range, come a courtin' Barbara Allen, come a courtin' Barbara Allen. It was in the merry month of June, green leaves they was bloomin'. Young Billy on his deathbed lay, just for lovin' Barbara Allen, just for lovin' Barbara Allen. We sent a message out to her, place where she was dug in, saying, come and see young Bill today. Oh, we think that he is dying. Yeah, we think that he is dying. Now slowly, slowly she got up, slowly she went to him, and when she pulled the blanket back, said, Bill, I guess you're dying. Oh, Bill, I guess you're dying. Yes, I'm sick, I'm very sick, I never shall get better until I get the love of you. Oh, the love of Barbara Allen. Yes, the love of Barbara Allen. Well, as she went walking back through the brush, she heard the cattle moaning, and every moan they seemed to say, hard-hearted Barbara Allen, hard-hearted Barbara Allen. Oh, father, go dig my grave, dig it deep and narrow. Young Billy died for me today, I'm gonna die for him tomorrow, gonna die for him tomorrow. We buried her in the old churchyard, Bill his grave was nigh her, and from his grave grew a red, red rose, and from hers grew a briar, and from hers grew a briar. Well, they tangled round the marker rocks, they couldn't grow no higher, and there they tied the true love knot. Oh, the rose and the thorny briar, yeah, the rose and the thorny briar. Near Medicine Bow, where I was born, there was a fair maid dwelling, made all the boys ride saddle sore, and her name was Barbara Allen, and her name was Barbara Allen. Thank you. It's been lovely. Thank you.
Well, that was my old friend Art Thieme. I send him all good wishes out there in Illinois. He can't play the guitar anymore, but he can sure sing, and he tells a crackerjack tale. You know, tales migrate like songs do. Tales have a core of meaning at the center, and then as that tale migrates, it changes its context. You warp it and you weave it until it suits you, until it suits the situation you're in. Now, I remember one night, it was back there, it was in the back room of somebody else's troubles there in Chicago. I had finished working, and Fred was there, Ed Holstein, a fine singer too, and Art Thieme had come over. I think he was playing at the Barbarossa. Everybody was playing at clubs around town. We kind of congregated well after midnight there in the back of somebody else's troubles, and we shared songs and beverage. And then we started sharing jokes and stories and tales. Art Thieme was not in the thick of it. Art Thieme lays back like a cobra poised to strike. And as we were getting up to put on our overcoats, it was the dead of winter, and preparing to leave, all of us mildly drunk, completely satisfied that we'd given everything our best shot, Art told a story, finally. And it just knocked me out. I mean, it was exactly the right thing to do at exactly the right time. That's timing. Well, of course, I can't say I stole it. I subsumed that story right on. I osmosed that story right on the spot. And then I turned it into this. Now, I have told this story maybe 50 times. And I have been greeted each and every time by blank stares. I am going to endeavor to tell this story one more time, anticipating a little higher degree of animation than I have enjoyed on prior occasions. Colonel Charlie Goodnight and Oliver Loving, pioneer settlers of the Old Southwest and folk heroes, both of them, founders of the great Goodnight Loving Trail, the westernmost of the great cattle trails from El Paso, Texas to Denver, Colorado, with a spur into Montana. Well, in years past, I've come down here and told you about the great turtle drive of 86. Told you about Oliver and the Fork, you remember? And that was a rare beauty. If you missed that one, that'd be too bad. And the egg-setting horse, though, well,
One day, Colonel Charlie Goodnight, elegant figure, loped up to Oliver Loving's little cabin on the edge of Old Taos, palisaded in those days. Oliver Loving ran the remuda. He was a horse wrangler, you see. And Charlie dismounted, knocked politely on the door. Oliver answered. He said, "Oliver, as you know, I am a prominent folk hero hereabouts, and I have some serious folk hero business to get at. But Madame Horace stepped in a chuck hole and broke its fool leg, and I'd appreciate it if you'd see a way clear to sell me a remount." "Well, Charlie," Oliver said, "I got an altogether fine horse here. Got good blood, good withers, good legs, but you don't want it." "Well, how's that, Oliver?" "Well, as I told you, Charlie, it's an excellent animal, but it's an egg-setting horse." "It's a what?" "It's an egg-setting horse, Charlie." "Why, damn you, Oliver Lovin'," Charlie Goodnight said, "for 50 years I have had to listen to your rural ribaldries, your raucous rusticana, your fecal badinage. I am not going to spend another 50 years doing it neither. Egg-setting indeed. Sell me that damn horse." Sold him the horse. Charlie Goodnight loped off down the road in pursuit of folk hero biz. On the other side of the fence was a little nest full of prairie chicken eggs. Well, that horse vaulted into the air, sunfished once, cast Colonel Goodnight down into the dust, leapt over that fence, and sat down on them eggs. Colonel Goodnight was madder than a boiled owl. He's mad. Picked himself up, slapped the dust out, clambered down the embankment, leapt the fence, jerk-reined that dumb brute back up onto the road, mounted it, saddle-wise. My discourse is welded together with little language tests to see if we're all in this, you see. Well, he loped off once again in pursuit of folk hero biz. He was crossing the old Taos River, the old river bridge, you know, before the river changed its course. Well, that horse flew into the air one more time, shook itself, cast Colonel Goodnight down onto the deck, broke his collarbone, fractured it anyway. That horse mounted to the railing of the bridge, leapt off into the water, and sat down. Well, Colonel Goodnight was astonished. He gathered himself together. He climbed down the embankment, waded into the stream, jerked that dumb brute back up onto the road, switched it around so it faced the other way, clumb up on it, put the steel to it, rode hell-bent for leather back to Oliver Loving's cabin, where he launched himself from the saddle, ripped the door from its frail leather hinges, cast it aside, dragged Oliver Loving out by the hair of his head, danced a little litany of doom and vituperation upon his rapidly aging body, picked him up by his hair, said, "Damn you, Oliver Loving. I know you told me that was an egg-setting horse." And it was. It sat. See that yellow runny stuff on its rump? Sat on those eggs. "When I was crossing the old river bridge across the Taos, you know, before they changed its course, that damn horse leapt off of that bridge. Fractured my damn collarbone. Sat down in the water. And I want to know why." "Oh, Charlie," Oliver said, "forgot to tell you. Sits on fish too."
Well, that's Blind Kenny Hall from down in Fresno once again. Kenny Hall, and I should always try to remember that that's Jody Stecker playing the guitar with him. And he's an excellent guitarist, but a really fine backup guitarist, Jody is. Two of the best musicians that I ever met on the face of the earth. When I was a boy now, they were just on the edge of starting to do long playing records, LPs. And Cousin Ray's record bar downtown in Salt Lake City, he took all of his 78 RPM records and threw them out on a table on the sidewalk and sold them all off, excuse me, for a nickel apiece. Well, I bought stacks of those, you see, with newspaper money. And that's where I first learned there was nobody traveling through Salt Lake City singing folk songs, disseminating songs, passing them along, collecting them like I've been talking about. That was the original source of the music, the old-time music that I learned, the ballad music and so on. So that gave me an opportunity then to put them back into the world, and which I still do, and keep on singing that music. Recorded music came in before radio. It came in out on the plains when the Montgomery Ward wagon would show up in front of your little sod hut and unload that hand-cranked Victrola with the records that you ordered from the catalog. Now, Kenny Hall down there in Fresno, that's really the first music that he remembers, that he remembers hearing. That's where the tunes that you hear him playing mainly come from. Well, he learned a lot of different places. When he was working at the broom factory, there was a Mexican worker who was also blind, and they used to play at the cantinas and clubs around where they lived, and he learned a lot of Mexican music and a lot of Mexican songs to sing. Kenny Hall told me once, he said, when he was growing up, he thought chickens had four legs. And I said, how's that, Kenny? He said, well, he really loved chicken legs. So when his mother made chicken, she always made up two of them so that he could have four legs to eat. So I always thought the chickens had four legs. Well, now, we haven't played Kenny Hall much except his intermission music. Let's listen to a whole song of Kenny Hall that he got. He learned this was played for him on a wind-up Victrola when he was 13 years old by his cousin. And now young people come to find him, his music, and his songs, and so they're passed on through.
Copper and the gunman are enemies today. The gunman shows no mercy as he falls upon his prey. Then with his smoking pistol that fires a shot of lead, he flees and leaves his victim lying on the pavement dead. The copper then pursues him, and as he starts to avenge, he was shot up on the spot, he never had a chance. The gunman has a sweetheart who loves him tenderly. The copper has a good wife and a little family. The poor boy then is captured, for justice always wins. The loved ones that he leaves behind must suffer for his sins. So let this be a lesson to some poor wayward lad. It's just the company that he keeps that makes him be so bad. So pray to God in heaven, who always gives us leave, that someday he'll be half the man his mother thought he'd be.
Oh, yes, it's Kenny Hall. I'd like to play, I'm going to play more of Kenny Hall as these programs progress, because that's a voice and a body of material that deserves to be heard. You know, there are a lot of antique traditions that die out as the population changes. They change for political reasons. Other people move in and take over your territory, and they bring a whole new kind of music, you see. Well, that's certainly what happened in California. Between, say, 1760 and the 1840s, there was a whole indigenous music in California. The people then called themselves Californios. And the music wasn't Spanish, and it wasn't Mexican. It was California music. There were, although it had elements of those, as well as elements of indigenous Native American music. Well, that tradition, you know, after the coming of the gringo Norte Americanos, began to die out. I played you one a tape of one of their rehearsals some time ago, and Dave Florens, one of the people who got that together, the group together, the Californios, heard it. And I mentioned that the Californios, I wished that they would make a CD, and by return mail, here it came, a CD of Los Californios. They came together under the musical direction of Vicky Mendy Gray and Dave Florens to do a music that was collected by Charles Fletcher Lummis in 1903. Charles Lummis, he chartered the Southwest Society, part of the Archaeological Institute of America, and he bought an Edison wax cylinder recorder, and he recorded literally hundreds of songs and dance tunes, which wound up in the Southwest Museum at Highland Park. Lummis called his recordings Flowers of Our Lost Romance. Well, that's what the name of this recording is. So let's listen to some old California music done by Los Californios. This is called La Magica Mujer. Magica Mujer. Isn't it wonderful that Dave and Vicky down there in San Diego would take the time and take the trouble to uncover those old cylinder recordings of Lummis's, who also had the patience to go out and collect that music, but then to create an organization that can perform that music and restore that piece of lost culture to the people who need it and the people who would miss it if it finally vanished forever. That's the power of folk music. It's one of the powers of folk music. Oh, yes, these songs get around. And there are people who carry them around as heirlooms, as fireflies, and turn them loose in other people's climate, in other people's lives. One of those is Faith Petrick. Now, Faith Petrick, she's in her 80s now and going like a steamroller. I mean, she has inexhaustible energy. She could be singing in a pub in Ireland, going over to visit her granddaughter. She could be singing at folk festivals in Australia, and a head full of music. She'll learn a song quick, and then she'll go out and she'll spread it around. so that everybody can learn it. And sometimes those songs that she discovers can be used to sort of set things straight in a quiet way. Now, Faith has found out, as many of us have, that The Yellow Rose of Texas is sort of a Texas patriotic song that's known in practically every English-speaking country one way or the other. Well, Faith found the original Yellow Rose of Texas, what that song started out as. It started out as a poem. The poem was written about Emily Morgan West. Emily Morgan West was an African-American slave who was captured by General Santa Anna during the Mexican-American War and pursued her vigorously. He regarded himself as a handsome man. She rejected his pursuit, but in the process, the story goes, stole his battle plans and had them smuggled to Sam Houston. Well, this was originally a poem written in 1858, but it was then became a song. And so let's listen to the original Yellow Rose of Texas sung by Faith Petrick.
The Yellow Rose of Texas was a woman fair to see. Though many loved her beauty, she lived in slavery. When war was waged for Texas and the battle shook our lives, General Santa Anna took Emily as a prize. She's the sweetest rose of color that Texas ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your Clementine and you sing of Rosalie, but the yellow rose of Texas is the only girl for me. He tried to win her favors, thought himself a dashing man, but his courtship she rejected, and she stole his battle plans. Then sent them to Sam Houston, for this she found a way, and so the Union armies fought and won the day. She's the sweetest rose of color that Texas ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, they sparkle like the dew. You may talk about your Clementine and you sing of Rosalie, but the yellow rose of Texas is the only girl for me. Grand is flowing, lived a woman brave and fine, a heroine of the people and honored in her time. The yellow rose of Texas has long been laid to rest, but history would be different without the lovely Emily West. She was the sweetest rose of color that Texas ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds, sparkled like the dew. You may talk about your Clementine and you sing of Rosalie, but the yellow rose of Texas was the only girl for me.
Well, there you have it. Now, if you were to trace back and find that original poem, you would see that the words you just heard are somewhat different. The story is the same. Now, people have added words to that story and changed the... Faith Petrick has added words and a verse to that song to bring it forward into our time so that it can do its work all over again. Music doing its work. Sparky Rucker is a great African-American singer. I mean, he's a blues singer, a marvelous guitar player, and historian of that wandering kind of soul who constantly asks questions and digs and digs and digs until you finally come up with the straight story. Sparky Rucker and his wife Rhonda, they go into schools, they go into school systems, and they do music from the whole black experience in North America. They use the music for teaching. Well, here's one of those. Here's a song that that Sparky sent me on a recording that they made some time ago. I'm sorry that I had missed it when it first came out. It's called Songs of the Blue and Gray and Black and White. Sparky learned this from a blind street singer by the name of Reverend Pearly Brown. And Pearly Brown told him that it was a song that was sung at the auction block as slaves were auctioned off. So they do a song like this in the classroom. Sparky Rucker's great-grandmother and her daughter were sold separately in Williamsburg, Virginia, and they were separated and never saw each other again. His great-grandmother walked 550 miles to Athens, Tennessee, chained behind a wagon. So you know that when Sparky stands up in front of school kids and sings this song, he knows what he's singing about.
Goodbye.
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 If I never, never see you anymore. Goodbye.
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 I will meet you on the other shore. Live the life.
Live the life.
Live the life.
Live the life.
If I never, never see you anymore. Live the life.
Live the life.
Live the life.
Live the life.
I will.
Goodbye, Sparky Rucker. That was his wife, Rhonda, playing the harmonica there. That's a very moving experience once you know where it came from. The social experience. To me, the center of all of this, where all of this comes together and serves its most useful and humane purpose, is when these songs that migrate around the country, when these songs are dragged up out of the past where they're in danger of extinction like endangered species, when they come into the living room, when they come into the backyard with a group of people just sitting around socially sharing music and food, the folk music societies, the singer circles that proliferate around the country, and they sing it not as performers, not as competition. They sing it just for the love of the music and for the love of each other and each other's company. And I'm going to finish with one of those. I was in Saratoga Springs. I saw a boy jump off of a roof of a garage. And the old Dutchman next door is a retired sea captain. He looked at me and said, that kid's a regular Sam Patch. I said, what does that mean? He said, I don't know. We just always said it. Well, I dug and dug and asked questions. And finally I found out that Sam Patch, from the last century, it had fallen into the language. His name had. Sam Patch made a living jumping off of bridges and jumping off of waterfalls as a spectacle. And that's how he made his money. He was from New Jersey. They called him the Jersey Leaper. Well, I found out that he had made his final leap off of the falls of the Genesee River in downtown Rochester, New York. And he didn't make it. He wound up being chipped out of the ice after the thaw came up there towards Charlotte, as the river goes into Lake Ontario. I told that to the Folk Music Club, that story, to the Folk Music Club in Rochester, New York, and then I left town. By the time I got back, 2 or 3 years later, they had started a Sam Patch Day, a citywide celebration, and they had gone to the Historical Society and found an old song about Sam Patch. And after I'd finished my concert and we went over to have a social time afterwards so that we could share some food and music, that whole club gathered around me. I had a little handheld tape recorder, and I hardly knew how to use it. But I finally found that tape, and here Steve Baker helped me to restore it. It was underwater for some years. This is where the music all comes together, the social experience. Joseph Campbell said, all we really want is to be completely human and in each other's company. Let's listen to the Golden Link Folk Music Club at a late night party singing Sammy, Sammy, Sammy.
It was 1826 and free, as we may all. Thank you.
thanks for listening. This is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the safe Great Southwest. I must mention that these processes I'm talking about, of songs being brought forward, of songs being spread far and wide for us to use and sing, these processes ensure that our musical culture remains deeper, broader, more useful than what comes to us through market analysis, through consumer culture. Enough said. See you later. From Wendell Berry. The gods are less for their love of praise. Above and below them all is a spirit that needs nothing but its own wholeness, its health and ours. It has made all things by dividing itself. It will be whole again. To its joy we come together, the seer and the seen, the eater and the eaten, the lover and the loved. In our joining it knows itself. It is with us then, not as the gods whose names crest in unearthly fire, but as a little bird hidden in the leaves who sings quietly and waits and sings.